19th where I met at Saturday still where you're at?
Yes, it is.
All right, and we're going to go ahead and do another update. What I did want to let you know is anybody who happens to listen to this that was a follower of your Bamboozer account, no, the feds did not take it down. It was taken down, but now your Bamboozer is back up and running, and people can go to that one. It's Jason Patrick 11 on Bamboozer. And also, what I was what I was able to do between last time we talked and this time is to go ahead and embed that Bamboozer player on the website, downloadedcontent.com/JPP. So whenever you get Bamboozer installed on your phone and you live stream, people can see you on your Fight for Freedom Never Sleeps Facebook page and on the downloaded content page.
Good deal. Appreciate it.
No worries. All right. So any court updates since last time we spoke?
Well, I mean, I got an update from the attorneys that the prosecution was seeking approval from the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, on a subpoena for a member of the media to testify in their case.
And who is this?
And,
go ahead.
You know what? I don't remember his name. I think he's an OPB reporter. I have his name. I just don't remember it.
Is it Gary Hunt?
No, it's. I think his name is Sepulveda or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so that subpoena, request for subpoena, was autographed by the new AG. And so I sort of just brought that update on my Facebook, and then the partisan avalanche came as the right began to question me on naming Jeff Sessions in the prosecution's case in Oregon. And it just seems like people don't understand that, you know, the prosecution is running with the authority of the executive branch of government. Despite it being changed, it's business as usual. and I guess some people just find that shocking. I don't know.
Yeah. So what do you think that subpoena is about with this particular journalist?
Well, the prosecution said in court that they were requesting the subpoena. They believed that there would be some legal affront to the subpoena, being that it's to a member of the press. And I think they're, you know, working that out. And I think once they get it worked out, then we'll be discussing it in court as well, probably outside the purview of the jury. On one of the court days.
Okay. All right. And a few people have asked me since last time we talked about this stuff that's going on with a Gary Hunt. Do you know what this is about? And can you tell people what that situation is about?
The judge had initially made an order that not allowing information to be shared, 302s and then confidential human source reports. And that was to everybody in the purview of the court. Now, Gary Hunt seems to have access to them somewhere or another. He's referenced them in some articles.
All right, for people who don't know, who's Gary Hunt and what's he associated with, or what is it exactly that he does, for those who have never heard of the guy?
Gary Hunt's a journalist that writes for a blog post on outpostforfreedom.com, I believe is the title of it. And he's a researcher and a journalist that does research and writes articles and is, you know, critical of the government. I think long-standing critical of the government. He's an older gentleman. And I met him in January of what, last year. And so he began writing these articles, and they were completely fascinating. People shared them with me, and then all of a sudden, he was getting new information that was definitely beneficial. He was naming names at the time people were looking for names, and then all of a sudden he must have been getting too close to the prosecution's case, because they got very upset and filed some stuff with the judge. The judge told them she doesn't have the authority to do anything to Gary. They filed again. The FBI investigated, signed affidavits. And then I guess just recently the judge has ordered Gary Hunt to appear either in person or by phone to the court, I think sometime in March, to answer for how or where he may have come across the information that he's using to write the articles that he's writing.
So there's a canary somewhere.
I don't know how that works. I've talked with Gary a couple of times. I've never shared confidential, whatever the blocked information was, with Gary. It's interesting to say the least. I mean, you and I both know this behemoth does not like people telling stories outside of school about their racketeering and criminal activity and denying the Constitution and things of that nature. So Gary done that, so now he's in their crosshairs, and
so him being,
we'll see what happens.
Him being summoned to courts in March, so this is kind of, this isn't like they're not calling him to the stand for, say, your trial. This is something independent that is related.
It's basically, I think what they're alleging is that he's in violation of a court order. The judge is sort of alleging that she's not sure that he is, and then ordering him to appear to say that he isn't or share why he's not subject to the court order.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. There was something, what was it? That something, I guess his blog or certain articles from his blog, where it was threatened that they were going to be taken down. I guess there was a request put out there by somebody in the Liberty Movement to clone it as quick as they could. Are you privy to any of that?
Oh, yeah. When first came after Gary, the prosecution and the FBI were claiming that it was protected materials and that it needed to be taken down in the interest of public safety because it was putting lives in danger and things of that nature. So initially, whatever he had out there, the prosecution, the FBI was claiming that it was putting lives in danger.
Which means it was hurting their case.
Yeah.
Let me translate that for you. It means it was hurting their case. National security.
Right.
All right.
Which is crazy because, supposedly everybody at the refuge was putting lives in danger, and the only one who died was Lavoie Finicum, and that was due to the escalation and illegally fired shots and lying and covering up from the FBI.
Right. All right. So as your trial is, it's still opening statements are due for the 21st?
Tuesday should be opening statements. That's
okay, so
correct.
We're certainly going to hear from you then. Is there any other case related or trial related stuff you want to let people know as we go forward?
I think it's important for people to know, because I think some people don't, that the trial that we're having is actually, and I don't know if I mentioned this the last time we talked, but it's three trials rolled into one. It's a jury trial for some felonies that other people have already been acquitted of and really, according to the law, shouldn't even be tried again, but that got ruled against. And then it's a a misdemeanors trial, which the jury doesn't even get to know anything about, that will then be decided by the judge on her own. And then it's a completely separate trial with a separate name for a felony of just one of the defendants that is also then decided by the jury. And I'm not sure if we can throw the kitchen sink and other things in there as well, but that's what we got going on.
Okay, so you're not that other, you're not the one that's having the third felony? Or
No, Dwayne Eamer has a third felony, and so on the court docket, it gets confusing because when people look up what's happening, there's three separate docket orders on the same, you know, list in the same courtroom at the same time. And so some people were confused by that, and that's why. You know, I've heard people make conjecture that certain people in the government get paid for disposing of cases, so why not make three cases out of one if that happens to be true? I don't know if it is or if it isn't, but I've heard it before.
One of the things we spoke about previously, which I think is really important, I know you think it's important, is that it's real important that people not forget that all of this is happening as a result of the injustice with the Hammonds.
Yeah, dude, I don't even know how to tell you that I lose sleep at night, and it doesn't have anything to do with this case. It has to do with Dwight Hammond. Dwight Hammond, Dwight Hammond, Dwight Hammond, you can't say his name enough. The newly elected president hasn't said his name. He's 74 years old, Daniel. He's a rancher. He's the salt of the earth guy, humble, giving, a blessing to the planet, and is going to be in jail. He's already been in jail for a year, and will have to do, 3 years and 7 months more at the age of 74. His wife's health is failing. And all because he ranched effectively and burned grass that the federal government deemed inappropriate, despite the fact that they were going to burn it anyway. Oh, I mean, I start talking about it and I get upset. I'm telling you what, I get really, really upset. You can have whatever kangaroo monkey screw trial you want with me. You know, Dwight Hammond needs to be out of jail. I went there for Dwight Hammond. I stood because of Dwight Hammond. All of this, every bit of this, began because of the injustices that happened to Dwight Hammond. And the fact that he's still in jail makes me physically ill, makes me very upset, angry almost.
Yeah.
I try not to get angry, but I'm telling you,
Yeah, and like I told you earlier, the whole Malheur Refuge event was a double-edged sword in that for those with a big attention span, if they start and they know nothing except for what maybe mainstream media brought out, if they start to do research, that when they go back to the origins of it, they'll see that it started as a very huge injustice that you guys were trying to draw attention to and prevent it, you know, and the sheriff didn't do his due diligence. This, you know, that is what it is. One thing led to the other, and this kind of ties back into unlocking your bamboozer. Your bamboozer was locked, you know, for protection purposes. But then, you know, my opinion on the matter is that everything that you filmed is above board and can only help you in that. You specifically, if you go back through the feed on that Bamboozer account, it shows the nature of your character, which is you weren't looking to start a fight. You weren't trying to you were just trying to protect somebody from bully. And you've consistently tried to protect people from the bully of the federal government and from the state. And so ultimately, because of the nature of your character, in that way, ultimately, the logical conclusion was that you were going to get arrested at some point and go to jail and go to trial. But the most important
That's the thing. If you're exposing this, I mean, you and I both know, I was in Georgia standing 90 feet away minding my own business mm-hmm. and went to jail. Mm-hmm. You know, they had the sense enough to throw it out, but that doesn't mean what you did was legal. And nobody's coming to arrest the state mercenaries when they break the law. There's nobody coming to arrest them. There's no accountability. They go scot-free and then do weird civil claims, which is completely backwards, where there's two sets of rules. There's a ruling class and a ruled over people, and it's just not how this was designed. And so what happened to the Hammonds was a travesty. You know, the lands issue sort of points to how a travesty like that can happen. So they correlate, only most people don't have an attention span long enough to understand how and where the correlations are, how big this spider web is, where it reaches, and how it grabs what it grabs. And it's frustrating.
And me and you, we'd also discussed that, you know, people who, you know, and me and you both are trying to make sure that attention stays on this issue, you know, with you, in hopes that the attention isn't taken away from the origin of this particular thing, which is the Hammonds, because I'm an optimist. I know, and you know, that the legal system is a magic show of who can find the best loopholes the quickest. And I know that there are plenty of liberty people out there who play around with the Bar Association, who know statutes and acts, that have the mental ability and the resources to jump into the legal system to do something about the Hammond situation. And I think both of us are kind of on the same page where if you're out there and you're listening, could you do that?
Yeah, I mean, somebody should be able to do something. I mean, one of the ways that I got to where I got is I got tired of saying somebody could do something, and I had to say, you know what, I'm somebody. Mm-hmm. I can help by bringing attention, a voice, a video, a blog, whatever I can bring. You know, I'm just a dumb roofer from Georgia, but I can do that.
But you're not an attorney. You're not an attorney, and they need an attorney.
Right. You know, I'm not an attorney. I play one in this court case that I'm in, but I sure wouldn't want the Hammonds to have to depend on my abilities. Right. 'Cause I don't know that much about their case, but it shouldn't be possible for a rancher to go, listen, if you could go to this place, dude, and just sit high up and look at huge thousands of square miles of grassland, you couldn't pick 139 acres out of it, mm-hmm. right? Somebody could burn 139 acres somewhere in that thing. You could come up the next day and not know where it was. You wouldn't be able to see it. It's that vast of a place. And, you know, and ranchers have been doing that for years. That's the way they manage lands. That's how lands are managed.
All right, now, logically, let me ask you, do you think that what happened to the Hammonds as a result of their interaction with the BLM, do you think that it was just a freak accident, or that this was, like some people say, a deliberate attempt at land grab?
I don't know that there's any way you couldn't call it that faced with all of the evidence. Now, the government will, right? You know, the evidence that they have that's a land grab far outweighs any of the evidence they have in the cases that they're pursuing now. Mm-hmm. But they don't pursue cases against themselves, you know, obviously, but given everything that transpired, I don't know how it could be viewed any other way.
Right.
You know, you 5 years on a counterterrorism statute for a rancher that burned grass is an extreme level of duress to put on somebody who everybody knows you want that land, and then put them in a first right of refusal to sell it to you once they're in duress. Okay, that's just the evidence, right? So what's the government's state of mind? I mean, that's where we're at now, is, you know, how, what is their state of mind? Oh, we were just following the statute that, of course, we wrote. You can't look at it and not see it, and but they'll say the same thing about me, so who, you know, I don't know, man.
Right.
It's ugly.
And there are a lot of people who don't have very good experiences with the BLM, and I think this is something I meant to bring up with you last time we talked, but it eluded me at the moment, was that the question of this, and let's be practical about it. It's not a conspiracy theory. Like, for example, here in Georgia, the Department of Driver Services, anybody who can look at documents, even as a layman, knows that the Department of Driver Services is not a government entity. It is a corporation. It's outsourced. They call you a customer. You know, if you call, go to their website or go down to the DDS office, it's a corporation. And so this topic of the Bureau of Land Management being a corporation came up in certain liberty circles. What has your research or understanding of the BLM brought you to on that issue? Is it constitutionally sanctioned, or is it in fact an outsourced corporate company?
I mean, dude, it's all hidden. It's all hidden. I mean, they claim all this federal jurisdiction. You know, they're all separate entities with their own loops and ties. And, you know, again, that's conspiracy theory. There's enough low-hanging fruit, like a friend of ours likes to say, to not have to go there. But sure, I mean, it seems quite evident. I mean, Daniel P. Love, the hero of the Bundy thing, who's now under a whole bunch of scrutiny years later, claims, you know, his own authority inside of his own power structure under his own tutelage through the Bureau of Land Management. Like, he thinks he was the top dog, and his authority, there is no authority higher than his.
The reason I bring it up is, you know, just call it food for thought. It would be interesting to have that clarified in open court of law, whether or not the BLM is a government agency or a private entity, because I think that would do something different to the charges against, say, impeding a federal officer. Well, if it's an outsourced company, that's not a federal officer. It's not a federal piece of equipment. It's not a federal institution at all. It's privately owned. So I think that would change something.
But the thing of it is it's not even relevant, because this case has absolutely zero to do, according to the judge and the prosecution, whatever, with the Bureau of Land Management.
Wow. Okay. Nothing.
It's the charge is impeding federal Fish and Wildlife Services and another entity that I can't remember who it is right now. because those are the entities whose employees work at that particular piece of property. Now, nobody that went there knew that, because nobody that went there cared. They went there for completely other purposes.
Right.
Be they First Amendment or adverse possession or what have you. Nobody knew.
Well, let me ask you this. In the first round of trials, I know you were there most of the time. Were the Hammonds ever brought up during trial?
Oh, yeah. They were brought up. The judge wrote a little snippet where she explained to the jury who they were, and then when they were brought up, they could be brought up by witnesses of the conspiracy as to their state of mind, but couldn't be brought up by other witnesses speaking to the conspiracy, up to and including one of the sons of Dwight Hammond got objected to for speaking about the Hammonds.
Okay. Now, did you meet the Hammonds personally?
I met Dwight.
Yeah. My question would be, would it be possible, because you met the guy personally, to call him to the stand as a character witness? And maybe we can hear from Dwight Hammond?
It has absolutely crossed my mind. But the point is, by calling him up here, number one, he's 74 years old. Mm-hmm. So he would have to travel in the marshal's custody from California to Portland and go through all that hassle. He loses all of his commissary and whatever he's collected of his own property inside the jail system by traveling.
Wow.
Would have to come here, get transported from the jail to the courthouse to testify to, you know, whatever. It's too much. I wouldn't put the man through that. I wouldn't put him through that. I don't care if it got me 100% acquitted. I wouldn't put the man through that.
If he wanted you to, would you?
Yeah, but he didn't want to stand up for himself due to the persecution. So I, you know, yeah, if he wrote me and said, please have me come testify, sure, I would do it. But I would even love to talk to him and say, dude, I don't think you need to do that. There's enough truth going to be told in the courtroom where it would be unnecessary, you know, other than giving him a voice, which he doesn't have now because he's in jail. It's sort of, you know, unnecessary.
Yeah, that's the main thing is to give him a voice if it was something he wanted to utilize, which that's there. You know, I think that if there was contact made between you and Dwight Hammond, and he thought that would be a good idea to have his piece heard, or, you know, try to salvage what can be salvaged from this whole situation, I think that would be great. You know, but then again, like you said, it's difficult to, you can't force people into speaking if they just don't want to. I get that.
And it's just, you know, given the situation that he's in, it's just too much. It's too much. You know, traveling with the marshals is not a vacation, dude. It's work the entire time, sitting chained to whatever, going without food a lot of the time. You know, it's no picnic.
All right. Let's see, we're coming up on the 30-minute mark. We wanted to keep this under 40 minutes. But go ahead, and if there's anything else before opening statements start Tuesday, you want people to be aware of or anything, you know, any way that they can help you, anything that's on your mind about what's about to come down the pike this week, go ahead.
I mean, just, you know, refresh yourself on the Constitution. Read it. We're so far removed from things, and the country's nearly turned into hero worship through partisanship. You know, I don't really know, Daniel. Like, I used to like to keep my videos under 5 minutes because I have a short attention span. So I don't know what people want to hear, but there injustice happens every day, and ignoring it is consent. Allowing it to continue is consent. You know, I'm up here watching. The court is going to make a precedent. This is upsetting to me too, right? So I stand for more freedom, more constitution, and whatnot. And as a result, through my case, the precedents, court precedents for the very first time, near as I can tell, and what I've heard from all of the lawyers, is I will have a bench trial on misdemeanor charges without a jury that results in property forfeiture. Mm-hmm. That means it's not a jury that hears it. One judge hears the evidence on their own, decides guilty or not guilty, and will lay claim to my property, potentially. Mm-hmm. So, especially in the state of Oregon, so that's the precedence. That's a court precedence. Near as I can tell, the very first time that will ever happen or has had the possibility of happening. Well, if you don't understand that the court doesn't follow the Constitution, it follows its own laws that it makes up, pulls out of thin air through creating precedents. They mean they write law from the bench by setting precedents. Mm-hmm. So what in Oregon, right now, that Oregon has deemed legal, that the federal government has deemed illegal, that the federal government could then charge you with a misdemeanor and take your property, is the marijuana thing. If this precedent goes through in Oregon, the FBI will have their hands full if they choose to, following people home from the dispensary, writing them a ticket, possibly taking them into custody, and then have a bench trial and take their property in commission of the misdemeanor, which is possession of marijuana. You know, I'm not a big possessor of marijuana, but I do like freedom. So I know people who that's important to, who've rallied and fought tooth and nail to get it. And the federal government is creating, out of thin air, through my case, a back door to come after you and take things from you, mm-hmm, through the precedents that they make in my case. So it's important, seems important to me for the entire state of Oregon, and it's disappointing that they'll create it here.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that really boggled me and a lot of other people was after the first round of trials, a lot of the, anybody who was acquitted was then said, oh, well, you know, guess what? You got to go to Nevada. We got some charges there. Do you anticipate that happening again with the second round of trials?
No, the people who were charged in Nevada were charged a long time ago. Now, that is to say the federal government can and will do whatever it wants to do.
Yeah.
The people that got held and went to trial in Nevada were already being held, had been transported back and forth to Nevada through those charges. So, no, I don't expect that to happen here. They've sort of dangled additional charges over the head of Dwayne Emmer a few times that has him sort of, I'm sure, nervous about, you know, what might or could be additional charges, which is about what they do, continue the duress. So it's hard to say. They can do whatever they want, so,
right.
You know, I'm not holding my breath, but...
You don't anticipate that's something they're going to
do? No, not at all.
All right. Well, I know that people out there, as soon as, you know, after opening statements start on Tuesday, me and you are going to try to get together as soon as we can, you know, while it's fresh in your mind to get stuff out. So we'll keep this one pretty short and simple before trial starts this week. I know you're not going to do it because that's just who you are, but I do want to refer anybody who's listening to please support Jason Patrick in any way that you can. And even though, you know, we're not materialist here, it would really help if you supported him monetarily and his family monetarily, because you pretty much had everything confiscated from you, and you're doing this by the seat of your pants. And so anybody who's listening, You can go to downloadedcontent.com/JPP, and there's an about page. You can find out about Jason. There is a contact page, which is about to be updated with current contact information. There is a link to a family PayPal account that those funds go to helping Jason, and there's also a GoFundMe at gofundme.com/JasonPatrick. Before Monday, I assure you, the Bamboozer feed will be on that site. And anybody who's listening, if you appreciate what Jason's doing, which you do, please go to it. And if you are hearing this either on the podcast, on YouTube, or on the site, there's a like button and then there's a share button. The more people hear about it, the more attention, the more it's going to cause the government and the state to pause at doing anything underhanded. So, Jason, with that being said, is there anything else you want to tell everybody before we go out? Go.
No, just love each other and, let's hope for freedom. Let's push for freedom. Let's talk nicely about freedom. I'd say fight for freedom, but I don't think too many people are there yet. So, we'll get there someday, maybe.
All right, man. Well, we're going to look forward to hearing from you Tuesday. So that's when we'll get back with you.
All right, thanks.